Well, thank you very much. It's great to be back after a while. So this talk is, was written under the impression that at least not all the words in the title are familiar to everyone. And I'm not talking about the first four and the last three. So here is some version of a plan. So first, I will try to motivate why one should look beyond. Well, why one should try to look beyond superstrings in ADS5 cross S5. I should say you will all be treated to my beautiful handwriting, which, anyway, if it becomes illegible, please let me know. Yes, well, I was thinking about that, but somehow. Right. So why should one look beyond strings in ADS5 cross S5? Not much beyond, just beyond. And then some inspiration from a system which already appeared in the context of strings in ADS5 cross S5, namely an S2 sigma model and a close classical relative of his, the Sine-Worden model. So this turns out to be perhaps the simplest example of this thing. So this has been done many, many years ago by Pollmeyer. Some 30 or so. Not in the context of ADS5 cross S5 string.
Part of the integrability?
He did it for his own reasons. And then with this source of inspiration, I will review the Pollmeyer reduced ADS5 cross S5 string, which is the work of Arkady Zeitlin and Maxim Grigoryev, as well as Andrei Mikhailov and Sakura Shafer-Nameki. And then with this starting point, I will try to argue that it is important to study the UV properties of the system. And I will study that at one and two loops, which is some stuff I did together with Arkady earlier this year. And then I will perhaps finish some conclusions if I move sufficiently fast. So anyway, we have all been studying strings in ADS5 cross S5 for the last 10 years or so with considerable success in connection with integrability. We certainly have learned a lot. Integrability. We have certainly learned a lot, and to a large extent, we have a good handle on long operators, meaning that we are sufficiently confident that we can reliably compute their anomalous dimensions at both at weak coupling, at strong coupling, and if we are strong enough, at intermediate coupling, if we manage to solve the asymptotic Bethe-Ansatz equations, which have certainly been reviewed here earlier in this program. Now, one thing that is not really well understood at the moment is how to deal with short operators. And the reason for that is largely technical, and it comes from certain peculiar properties of the Green-Schwarz string, at least short operators at strong coupling, I should say. Up So it comes from certain properties of the Green-Schwarz string, namely how one can quantize it. So if you look at the Green-Schwarz string in flat space, it has many terms, but one of them certainly looks like this. So 8 and epsilon are the usual 8 and epsilon. Sij is a diagonal matrix which looks like 1 minus 1. So this is what one would naturally look, what would naturally call kinetic term for fermions, and it certainly doesn't look like a kinetic term. It has, it's cubic, it's not invertible because this thing is a projector, it's not invertible because this thing is occasionally singular. So, well, this is a reflection of kappa symmetry. So to make sense of, to quantize the Green-Schwarz string, one usually needs to pick some kind of background for some component of X mu. In a flat space, this is, well, a very efficient version of that is the Lipkin gauge. Now, in ADS, the story is extremely similar. The operator looks slightly more complicated. It has the same projector in front. Now the derivative becomes a covariant derivative, and then there is a phi-form contribution. And one really has the same problem. One needs to pick some kind of background for some x, for some components of the target space from some target space coordinates, and that introduces various problems because it also requires that some charges are large because they end up being proportional to square root of lambda. Oh, I should say there is a square root of lambda from the ADS radius. So its charges turn out to be square root of lambda times some numbers which parameterize the solution, so they end up being large. Hence the reason, well, the restriction to certain long operators. Now this, well, these charges actually do a lot of good things for us. They, once you pick a solution and expand around it, the theory becomes massive. It also turns out to be power counting non-renormalizable. Yet, nevertheless, fine. Yes, please.
This is not that great for Lipkin gauge, really.
Yeah, okay. This part?
About large charges.
Right, so this is. Right.
So, P plus maybe. Large, but if you compute string mass, then
so pretty much for all solutions which are not light, which are not similar to light cone gauge in flat space. So I should say that indeed this most of this done is done in global coordinates. The reason being that in these coordinates there is a close, a very close relation between anomalous dimensions and ADS energies, and with the right choice of solutions, two-dimensional Hamiltonian.
So Roger, these large charges mean that you're perturbing about some long string?
That's right. Well, it's, it doesn't really need to be a long string. It has to be a string that's either long or it's moving pretty fast. So, for example, the BMN string would be would fall in this category. You have a point-like string which is moving pretty fast on the sphere, and that generates a large R charge. So, and the theory becomes massive. It is also power counting non-renormalizable, basically because the solution introduces some mass parameter, which once you absorb in theta, it becomes a dimensionful coupling of the wrong dimension. Now, as it turns out, it is power counting non-renormalizable, but at least up to two loops, it is also finite. And it is actually believed to be finite to all orders. There is a formal argument one can make, and if it's not finite, then we are in real trouble anyway. So,
it's conformally invariant before you put turn the charge on.
That's right. We don't really know that.
I guess it has it's singular as a gauge invariant.
That's right, yeah.
So when you turn the charge on, the connector becomes non-singular, but in a way does it inherit
conformal invariance is spontaneously broken. It's certainly not, well, we hope it's not explicitly broken, but nobody really has analyzed what are the consequences of that.
So what's the argument for finiteness?
Oh, the argument for finiteness is that the Lagrangian has two pieces. Something that resembles a lot a normal sigma model and something that is a Vesumino term, so it's odd under two-dimensional parity. This one is even. And kappa symmetry relates these two. Now, perturbatively, this thing cannot be renormalized because it's odd under parity. So it means that this one cannot be renormalized. Now, these words rely on having chosen a regularization which preserves all this and preserves kappa symmetry. And now, whether that exists or not is beyond two loops is an open question. We certainly hope that it is finite to all orders. The solutions do introduce certain fiducial mass parameters. And again, up to two loops, those parameters are not really renormalized. So that is, in some sense, a reflection of scale of the classical scale invariance. The other thing that follows from introducing a solution is that two-dimensional Lorentz invariance is broken. It's broken spontaneously again, but it is nevertheless broken, and that has reflections in various quantities that one is interested in computing on the worldsheet. In particular, one is interested in computing an S matrix for these massive excitations, and out of it extract pretty much anything that one wants, in particular the eigenvalues of the two-dimensional Hamiltonian. And because of this thing, the S matrix looks, because of breaking of Lorentz invariance, the S matrix looks peculiar. Well, it doesn't look as nice as one might hope. It is not a function of just dot products of momenta. It is a function of P1 and P2 separately, and that complicates things a little bit. It is still nevertheless fixed by symmetries.
Where do you get the breaking? There's only one generator, two-dimensional Lorentz group.
Yeah.
And
if you pick a solution, if you pick some solution, x of sigma and tau, and expand around it, so you need to pick that in order to have an invertible kinetic term for fermions. So generically, there will be explicit sigma and tau dependence in the Lagrangian. The best of cases, all coefficients of the expansion will be constant, but still sigma derivative with respect to sigma and tau appear with generically different coefficients. In even the best of cases, the quadratic part of the Lagrangian is Lorentz invariant, but the higher order terms do break Lorentz invariance. So the S matrix is fixed by symmetries up to a phase, and it does depend separately on P1 and P2, and this actually, at least the three-level structure of this, has been confirmed by explicit calculations. So Again, the S-matrix is complicated. And probably Matthias wrote it in his review. Now, this is all about long operators. Oops. Now, for short operators, various techniques have been invented over time, and it is really the thermodynamic beta ansatz and its relatives. So the way this thing works is that one starts with a theory on a cylinder of infinite time length and finite spatial extent, and then one interchanges tau and sigma and treats the theory on an infinite line with compact time. And then from the equality of the partition functions, one extracts, say, the ground state energy. And with some more effort, one also extracts excited state energies. Now, if Lorentz invariants were present, this exercise doesn't do anything to anyone. The S matrix would be invariant because it is Lorentz invariant. However, with a separate dependence on P1, P2, energy and spatial momentum, this is a relatively unpleasant operation. And the S matrix here is different from the S matrix here. And that leads to various other complications, in particular the computation of this thing, which eventually was completed by Aryutyunov and Frolov not long ago. Anyhow, because of all these complications, it would be nice.
Well, actually, the phase is not.
Yeah, that's right. So it would be nice to preserve somehow.
What was this common between the two of you?
One sec. It would be nice to preserve Lorentz. So the comment is that this so-called mirror S matrix was computed, but it was again computed based on symmetries. And symmetries fix the S matrix up to a phase. So there is. It's basically the same phase that there's a fair amount of time to determine in the original theory. So, so strictly speaking, this is not really completed. It is still a phase. So, it would be nice to do away with Lorentz invariance violation and somehow keep Lorentz and do string theory with it, well, in the presence of Lorentz invariant. I hope this convinces you that one should look beyond this kind of approach. And exactly how to look beyond is, can be inferred from this example that Paul Meyer discussed, and in some 1970-something, and which has been also generalized for other theories by Bacchus and friends in the 80s and 90s. Here is the example. Consider the following theory. So this is just a sigma model on S2. One can also consider string theory on S2 cross R, and then this would be time, and then fix T equals kappa tau using various symmetries. And one can repeat exactly the same steps that I'm about to outline. So if you try to choose some background here, everything is lost, symmetries are lost, we get back to the same story. So the idea would be to reorganize this somehow. And the reorganization comes from the observation that the stress tensor in this theory is holomorphic. So because it is holomorphic and because at least classically this theory is conformally invariant, one can take T++, which is D+X T+X, to be mu square, where mu is a constant. Well, initially it can be set to be an anti-holomorphic function, but then using conformally invariance you can set it to a constant. And likewise you can write T- to be D- minus X mu square. If mu's are different, then you can rescale x plus and x minus to make them the same. So now what we have, so besides this, we also have the constraint that x squared is 1. So
you are going to classically?
Yes. So everything that I'm going to say for this S2 sigma model is classical, and then I will whine about why it's not true quantum mechanically. So we have three vectors, x, d plus x, d minus x, which have unit norm if you rescale them properly here, which are also orthogonal if you use this. So d plus x dot x is 0 is d minus x dot x. So really there is a single gauge, a single SO3 invariant quantity that remains in the problem, and that is the dot product d plus x with d minus x, which is conventionally written as mu squared cosine 2 phi. So the idea would be to treat this phi as a fundamental field rather than these three x's. So if you take the equations of motion from here, construct d plus d plus xm, d minus xm, and plug them into d plus d minus phi, which you can construct by taking the r cos here. What you find is that that phi has to obey the following equation. So let me not write out the details. So one finds that this equation has to be obeyed, which is the Sine-Gordon equation. So why is this true classically and not true quantum mechanically? Well, it's this. It's these steps in this particular approach. Namely, we had to use some kind of the classical conformal invariance to set these guys to constants. Quantum mechanically, this is certainly not conformal. It confines. It does all sorts of things. So these particular steps break down, and we don't get to this. We get to something else. We get to a theory of SU2 vectors.
Already at that time, people replaced that
with
mean.
They did.
And this is not going to be useful?
Yes, this is exactly the strategy that will be useful. Because we hope that strings in ADS5 cross S5 are conformal. So this particular block goes away. Yes.
I have an unfortunate privilege of knowing well, so it should be sine to phi and no 2.
Yes, it is certainly sine, because otherwise it would be cosine Gordon model. And no 2, not to here or not to there?
No, down.
Okay.
Because you know the Lagrangian. If you know the Lagrangian, you can differentiate.
Well, okay, so I did not start from the Lagrangian, I actually did the derivation. Anyhow, it is the Sine-Gordon model. The idea would be to follow Maxim and Arkady and Andrei and Sakura and try to repeat the same steps for ADS5 process 5. The story is, of course, slightly more complicated because there are many more fields. And well, anyway, so that would be the plan, to repeat something that is morally analogous to this for strings in ADS. So questions? Yes.
So when you say reduce, I mean, is this still supposed to be equivalent reformulation?
So classically, this obeying, having a file which obeys this equation allows one to reconstruct up to SO3 transformations a solution of this. So the equations of motion are classically equivalent. In particular, this model is classically integrable. Well, it's also quantum integrable. This one is also integrable. Classically, the two Lax connections are equivalent. Quantum mechanically, they are not. I think. No, they aren't. So in principle, the same is true for pretty much anything that that follows this strategy. The reason it's called reduced theory, well, there is no, well, there is some reduction here. Here we start from 2 degrees of freedom, and here there is a single one left. So it is reduction in this sense. Basically, one solves this this constraint. Yeah. But the thing to notice is that if one were to solve this, these constraints by other means, SO3 would be broken, perhaps Lorentz invariance would be broken. Here, Lorentz invariance is present. Phi is SO3 invariant by definition. So pretty much anything that one might want is realized here. So this is why this strategy would actually be useful.
So it's somewhat analogous to like just solving Russell constraints. So if you set kappa to mu of this t, so we can see the strings on moving on S2.
Right. That's right. So you can phrase it in a different way. Let's start with strings on S2 cross R and impose Virasoro constraints this time. So impose t plus plus equal to 0. And in conformal, so fixed conformal gauge, impose the conformal gauge constraints and use conformal reparametrization to fix this. T equals, well, in this case it would be mu tau. Then these equations become exactly these two. So it is reduction in this sense. And here it is perhaps, well, solving these in the presence of that does break Lorentz invariance. All right, so more questions, comments? So there are, of course, many things that one might object to at this reduction, even for a conformal field theory, whether one has these realized quantum mechanically. So let's not voice those objections quite yet. They will certainly remain till the end, so there's time. Strings in ADS were constructed by Metsayev and Seitlin some number of years ago, one way to organize them is as follows. To organize the action is as follows. It's based on a coset. So one starts with some left invariant one forms. And it turns out that the group at the top of the coset has a Z4 symmetry, a Z4 automorphism, which allows you to split this this current in four pieces. And the names are sort of suggestive. This is a gauge field, which corresponds to the gauge, to gauging away the bottom of the coset. These two are supersymmetry transformations, so they're fermionic, and these are momenta, and they actually are the things which build the bosonic part of the, well, the kinetic part of the coset, of the coset action, yes.
The construction relies heavily on the fact that
the construction does not rely heavily on this Z4 automorphism. It, however, this Z4 allows you to package the action in a nice way.
I was about to ask on the fact that it's a coset.
Oh, it does rely a lot on having a coset. If it weren't a coset, then, well, you can write the quadratic part, the quadratic part in fermions. With a lot of effort, you can perhaps write the quartic part, but then there is a long way to go up to 32. One might attempt to do something in special gauges, but that depends a lot on the context. So the Lagrangian looks a lot like this in conformal gauge.
We don't have too many backgrounds which are cosets, I think. How large is this class?
Which is also 10-dimensional. not terribly large. So if you want a coset with just 10 dimensional and has 32 fermions, I don't know, it's a handful. There is some reduction of OSP48 divided by something, which is ADS4 cross P3. And then there are analogous ones for ADS4 cross S7 and ADS7 cross S4, but that's about all I know. So basically all the maximally supersymmetric ones and small variations.
So for low supersymmetry, there have to be some other...
For low supersymmetry, if the reduced supersymmetry comes in a fairly trivial way, like an orbifold, then you can start from the parent. Otherwise, so this would be the action, and this is supplemented by the conformal gauge constraint, which is just P plus P plus. Equal 0, equal P minus, P minus. So this 0 makes it a little different from the story before. The thing that saves the day is that it turns out that the following is also true. If you take this this P, which is really, in that form, it's an 8x8 matrix, and you put here P minus ADS, P minus sphere, then these traces are separately holomorphic, while they're not separately zero. So with these things in place, one can basically repeat these steps. One can delete these guys, set a mu square here, and solve these. So the solution turns out to look as follows. P plus is a can be brought to a constant matrix T, which is traceless, super traceless, and traceless in each component, because these are separately traceless. And then P minus is also a closed relative of this one. With G belonging to the bottom of the coset. So it's a gauge transform just. nice forms for T, which the one that was chosen is this one, 1, 2, minus 1, 2. So with this solution, all you have to do is, take this, stick it into the equations of motion coming from this, and also in the Maurer-Cartan equations, see what is solved, see what is not solved, and take what is not solved. What is not solved because of the presence of G. So take the equations which are not solved, call them equations of motion for G, and try to come up with an action for it. And if you do that, you find out that it is that the result is the following. You get a gauge WGW model action for G and the gauge field A, which is not entirely this A, plus an extra term. So this is a gauge WZW action with A belonging to SU2 to the 4. And this SU2 to the 4 has something to do with the commutant of this T inside the bottom of the coset.
This is like a mass parameter?
This is indeed like a mass parameter. It makes all fluctuations massive, certainly around the trivial vacuum. So one can try to play many games. For example, construct a massive S matrix for it, use integrability, you name it. At this stage, one would still have the same problem as for the Sein-Gordon model because we just treated the bosons. So no conformal invariance, but thank you. You lose exactly 2, which is what you'd expect to some extent. So again, this is a gauge WZW action for SP2,2 cross SP4. This is 4 divided by SU2 to the 4. So 2 SU2s act here, 2 SU2s act there. So this turns out to be 4 plus 4. So you do get something like 4 physical degrees of freedom for ADS and 4 from the sphere, which is morally what you get if you take some moving string and expand around it and throw away the gauge degrees of freedom. Right. So I am slowly and surely running out of time. I am about to write them. That thing remains there. The fermions are interesting.
Could you call this it's like a physical gauge thing?
We would like to think it is a physical gauge. Whether it is a physical gauge is, these G's that appear here, they're really related to currents of the original theory. They are not related directly to the original fields. So it would be a little bit of a stretch to call it physical gauge. It is, better said, a reformulation which captures the same number of physical degrees of freedom as the original theory. That would probably be a conservative statement.
And this mass term, does it break conformal invariance?
This is really the last section of my talk. So, the answer is no. Once you include all fermions and everything else, it at least up to 2 loops, it doesn't. This mu does not get renormalized. I'll get there. I hope. The fermions, one has to fix kappa symmetry. And Well, there are various ways of doing this. An efficient way of doing it, actually, is to solve the equations of motion for fermions, which are the following. So these would be the equations of motion coming from this action. They are certainly not garden variety equations of motion, and they look this way because of kappa symmetry. So one can fix kappa gauge by setting Q1 minus to zero. This is, well, it might appear a little bit violent, but this has been done before in flat space, for example. It is analogous to setting d minus theta 1 to 0 as a gauge condition. So this is, people have considered this in the past, not anymore. So it turns out that this gauge does not fix kappa symmetry completely. There is something left. So what is left looks as follows. So if you introduce new fields, which would be these ones, well, basically what's left, together with some G's inserted. So with these fields, it turns out that there is a kappa symmetry left, a piece of kappa symmetry left, which shifts these guys by some epsilons. Now, not the full epsilon is a free parameter. It turns out that only the following bit is a free parameter, namely this one, the one that obeys this. The part that doesn't obey this, I think that's right. Yeah, the part that does not obey this is determined by a choice of epsilon perpendicular. So it's really just half of each of these guys which can be thrown away by this transformation. And one can fix this as it was fixed by Maxim and Arkady by setting the following, by picking psi 1 and 2 to be just the part that's parallel. So one treats these guys as the physical pieces of fermions, and everything else is thrown out. And if you work through the equations of motion, then you find that the additions to this action look as follows. So left and psi left and psi right are basically psi 1 and psi 2 with some small rescalings by mu. And then a Yukawa interaction. So that would be the Pollmeyer reduced ADS5 cross S5 superstring. So
now you claim that because it's linear in fermions, linear in mu and erratic in mu, it's going to be unnormalized?
I will claim that it will be unnormalized. I will, well, it's a calculation involved. It's not immediately obvious from the dependence on mu. And the dependence on mu tells you that there is a small number of terms that can get renormalized. And those are just the terms which have mu present, because pretty much everything else is finite by itself. And the mu dependence cannot renormalize the first part, this one, just on dimensional kernels. Now, so this is...
How much supersymmetry would you call this?
Well, that's a very interesting question. For ADS5 cross S5, there doesn't seem to be any, at least not of any obvious kind. there is a potential additional symmetry, but we don't really know at the moment how to make use of it in a very efficient way. So actually, I should probably emphasize a couple of things. So if you go through the details of the formula, which I didn't write, it turns out that these two terms, the mu-dependent terms, are just the original Green-Schwarz action evaluated on the solution of these various constraints. These terms are, well, they come from the reduction. Now, originally, these two guys were related by kappa symmetry. So it is possible that the words which I said before about the non-renormalization of the Green-Schwarz action still apply to these terms. So basically, there is some kind of remnant of kappa symmetry after Gitch, some global version of it, which still relates these two. Whether this is really true or not, it remains to be seen.
Yeah, I just understand the philosophy. So classically, this is a reformulation of the original string. Mm-hmm. Quantum mechanically, we expect it to be different?
Quantum mechanically, well, this is... So I was coming to that. So the main thing that was sitting in the way of the equivalence of the Sein-Gordon S2 sigma model was the lack of conformal invariance at the quantum level. Now, we expect that the original ADS5 cross S5 string is conformal, so that particular problem goes away. There are additional things one might voice against an equivalence. For example, the transformation is non-local between these variables and the original ones. So it is not clear whether an equivalence can take place. The hard way to prove it is to compute the two partition functions, compare them. Perhaps not in general, just pick a solution which is common between the two and compare. It's not immediately obvious for reasons that I will describe in a second.
But this one is much easier to quantize.
It certainly is much easier to quantize. You just look at it, basically. So the fact that it is much easier to quantize, the fact that it is Lorentz invariant and everything else, makes it particularly attractive as a starting point for pretty much anything you might want to do.
Is there anything wrong with taking that as a definition of the string in ADS5 cross S5 without worrying about looking at their equivalent?
Well, we already know that the Green-Schwarz string reproduces a lot from the gauge theory side, so one would have to carry out similar checks here. But if they check out, certainly, that would be a great starting point. Yeah. So that's right. Okay. So I was actually postponing that discussion, but let me say it now. So the main problem is that it's hard to identify things from here with things from the ADS string and gauge theory because, pretty much everything here, these G's, these A's, are related to currents of the original theory. So the original charges, the original PSU2,2/4 is missing. Is basically gone. One might be able to find those charges among the non-local charges of this, or the higher local charges. It's not immediately clear where they are, but they should perhaps be in there somewhere. And once they are extracted, and once they are found, that would actually give a direct way of identifying things between the original and this reduced theory. But that is another story.
What's the physical meaning of the parameter mu?
Right, thank you. Okay, I don't seem to need my notes anyway. The physical meaning of mu is basically none. So anything that is observable should be independent of mu. The reason being that it enters in the game via this solution of Virasoro constraints, and it really appeared as a remnant of conformal reparametrizations. So if the original string was independent, with Cauchy diffeomorphism invariant, then this mu should go away in anything that is observable. It would, however, feature a lot in, say, an S-matrix for this theory, or, I don't know, vertex operators, perhaps.
Isn't it related to vacuum energy?
Well, the masses of fluctuations around the trivial vacuum are basically mu squared, so yes. Well, the total vacuum energy turns out to be zero, but because of cancellation between bosons and fermions. But yeah, each mode contributes something of order mu to the vacuum energy.
Since this was the free ADS cross S5 string.
Free as in G string equals zero, yes.
String equals zero order.
Yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, is it clear how to can you use this equivalence or those equivalents to compute interactions, G string corrections, and so forth?
Sure. We would not, just write vertex operators for this theory, compute correlation functions of them. Well, it's not immediately clear what the integral over Riemann surfaces means, because this is already gauge fixed, so there is nothing like a BC ghost or so, but probably one can invent something for them. It doesn't seem to be all that different from Natan's formulas. I mean, as far as missing BC ghosts go.
I might have worried that the natural vertex operators for the ADS5 cross S5 string were some horrible non-local beasts in terms of this new form.
Well, they certainly would be. There's natural vertex operators here, which one would be tempted to use. How to relate that to something one wants to compute in ADS, that is part of this relation of charges and everything else. But one can certainly compute something which grows with G string in here. More questions? All right. So, in the remaining 7 minutes, I will basically just tell you what the potential problems are if you think about renormalizing that theory and seeing whether it's finite or not. And then just state the result. So the main problem is that there is actually, if you look at it, there is a small number of terms compared to what could have been. So there isn't really, in this formulation of the theory, there isn't really a symmetry that relates, say, ADS5 cross, the ADS5 part and the sphere part. Yet here they appear with a definite relative coefficient, namely -1. And the same, they also appear here. So I can say that there are too few terms in the Lagrangian. Another potential problem is that these coefficients here are very much related. This one is the square of that one. And in the absence of something that relates bosons and fermions, that need not survive. So there are relations between couplings. The level would be 1. This was constructed from the equations of motion. So the level is not exactly determinable, but a natural choice is 1. I should say there is really an overall factor, and to have any relation to ADS5 cross S5, there should be a square root of lambda out front. So the level would be somehow, that can be eliminated, and then perhaps level 1 remains. There is a non-compact piece in here, so at least that one shouldn't have quantized level anyway. There's this SP 2.2 factor in here.
Yeah, but we'll do current algebra.
There is no chiral symmetry, so you might not want, because of these guys, so you might not want to do current algebra, I think. Uh, Right. So, while this theory is denormalizable by power counting, because of these, one might actually end up with a non-denormalizable theory on one's hands. So,
so the bottom line is that you do not expect dependence on the level?
Personally, I wouldn't. I don't know. Would you expect any?
So if this mu was zero, you have a continuum, and then it would depend on the mu. If mu is not zero, I guess we don't know.
If you take Benjamin Witness U2 or any coset like two-dimensional black hole, you have a level which is related to the size of the space. It's the same here. So the level is related to the radius, but here it's not really.
So, the dependence on that was actually
to maybe to organize the how one can think about this theory in ADS. If you consider ADS two as two, maybe you could.
I don't think I can.
It's essentially that theory. If you consider ADS two as two instead of ADS five as two, that theory becomes just n equals 2 supersymmetric sine gauge. So this gauge with the minimum model sort of trivializes the north subgroup.
I see.
The potential is just sine gauge plus fermionic. And then you have two dimensional supersymmetry.
So if you do, I suppose that since it's the size, I suppose that if you do. Supergravity on this background, then the size completely decouples from the physics. But once you do string corrections, you would expect some dependence.
Of course, yeah, any correction will depend on
the size.
1 over square of lambda is just 1 over k expansion.
All right. So, right, where was I? Oh yeah, so if one also looks at the symmetries of some discrete symmetries of that Lagrangian, it turns out that at odd loop orders, one can generate fairly easily things like this, as opposed to the supertrace, and at even ones. So this would be a problem, of course. One can generate the same, but with the supertrace. So anyhow, to do the calculation, the easiest way to proceed is to decouple the gauge fields, which is basically the same kind of transformation that you do for regular gauge WCW models. So and then in the end, you end up with just a regular WCW model for G. And these fermion couplings, which don't talk to the gauge field anymore, but they do talk to G. At one loop, there are two graphs to consider, one which is a tadpole, and one with two pieces from the Yukawa interactions. And it turns out they cancel each other out. Once you consider their contribution to the effective Lagrangian. So I should say this is, the calculation is done in some background field formalism. Start with G and write it as G bar e to some zeta. Because we're interested in UV divergences, G bar can be taken to be constant. Because if it's not constant, then it would contribute additional derivatives, and on dimensional grounds, they cannot be divergent. Also, pretty much everything that contains mu is treated as an interaction. Uh, That would be because, well, the only problematic term might be mass terms, but, well, at least for large momenta, you can expand in mass terms anyway. And if the integral is UV finite, that's it will be UV finite even if you don't do any expansions. So the one loop story is pretty short. It's this one. This, in the absence, so this is a fermionic line. Just this graph by itself would introduce some anomalous dimension of order n. So if you modify that Lagrangian to something that is SPn minus 2, 2 cross SPn, and the fermions cancel that. So that n actually is a little bit different from what you'd expect in standard WSW models for dependence of anomalous dimensions of vertex operators, which would go like Casimirs of various groups. And the reason for the change is the presence of this t. So basically you do get in the middle of the calculation all sorts of n plus 1s, which are Casimirs of SPn, but then there is a shift due to the presence of t. The two-loop story is longer.
So that's an anomalous dimension for G?
That would be an no. That would be an anomalous dimension for this whole potential. I should say. So this is the mu square part. There is an additional. One can ask what happens with the fermionic interaction, and that there is a single graph contributing to it, which is proportional to mu. It's a tadpole graph with a variety of terms. Just bosons propagate in the loop, and this one, the divergent part cancels out by itself. The two-loop story is longer. There are some graphs which I will not draw because I will not tell you what each of them independently is. Anyway, the bosonic part of the effective potential is this one, 32 m square, and then just the tadpole integral. And this is not mu, this is something else. This is not lambda either. I don't know. So that would be the bosonic part of the potential. Of the effective Lagrangian. There is a double pole here, which squares well with the fact that the anomalous dimension is n square. There's a simple pole, which would give two loop contributions to this anomalous dimension if it remained. But as it turns out, this is also minus the effective for fermions. Now, I should say this actually happens in a special scheme. It doesn't happen generically. It happens in the special scheme in which you would preserve two-dimensional supersymmetry if it were present. It also happens in exactly the same scheme in which the two-loop Green-Schwarz string is finite. That's two loops. So somehow it all squares well. Everything squares well with each other as far as scheme dependence goes. There is something analogous that one can say for the fermion for the contribution to this linear in mu terms. So let me skip that. The dependence on regulators is the same, and the same scheme dependence appears. So 5 minutes too late. This is basically the end of my story. Given that. This model is finite, and the original model is finite, it actually does suggest pretty strongly that they could actually be equivalent. Certainly, the various obvious problems, such as finiteness, don't stand in the way. As we've discussed over the last hour, it is certainly a good starting point and a very pretty starting point for anything you might want to do as far as integrability goes. One can, for example, compute some perturbative matrix. One can try to guess at an exact S matrix based on symmetries, certainly on the SU2 to the 4 symmetry that's manifest. It would certainly be interesting to prove all-order finiteness if it were possible. This perturbative calculation can be extended. Given that the Lagrangian is pretty simple, one can carry out some 3 and 4 loop calculations without particular difficulty, but certainly that would not prove all-order finiteness. Perhaps the symmetry, perhaps the symmetry I was mentioning as potentially related to kappa symmetry could help. Anyhow, let me stop here. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions?
Yes, sir. So is the two-loop calculation in this theory a lot easier than in the original Green-Schwarz?
I'm not sure.
I thought the whole motivation was that, the original Green-Schwarz.
Okay, I was about to clarify that a little. The two-loop calculation in the Green-Schwarz string involved expanding around the solution and computing the correction to the energy of some solution. To carry out exactly the same calculation here, it would still amount to expanding around the solution and facing problems about violation of Lorentz invariance. Two-loop calculations around the trivial vacuum are substantially, cannot be done in the Green-Schwarz string and can certainly be done here. From that perspective, yes, they are substantially easier.
Can you clarify, that you don't have PSU2,2/4, how you construct the dictionary to go to the gauge operators?
Well, ask me again in a few months. That's the most honest answer I can give. The idea would be that the PSU2,2/4 generators are somewhere among the higher charges of this model. Whether that is true or not requires first figuring out what the higher charges are and identifying those which actually obey the PSU2,2/4 algebra. It does not sound as crazy as it sounds. It is not as crazy. Never mind. It is not as crazy as it sounds. So, if you think of take ADS5+S5 in conformal gauge, T dualize all directions. You end up with the same ADS5+S5, but it's a different symmetry. The original generators of the conform of PSU2,2/4 are among the higher charges of this T dual model. So, in principle, it is possible.
More questions?
Back to 76 to Paul Meyer. So he observed this classical wave. He wasn't thinking about strings, just for sigma models. So he observed that it's related to Sine Gordon, and from there he was realized that string theory and sigma model 1s2 is integral, classical integral. And so that's basically the beginning of integrability of sigma models. So, in some sense, this Paul Meyer reduction looks like it works only when original sigma model is integral thing. But it's kind of ironically relates the story to the beginning, where the relation to Sine Gordon somehow was the argument why it should be integral. But later on, it was understood from
Coleman had an argument that this Sine Gordon is super normalized. Can you use similar arguments to
just two-dimensional theory?
It's not indeed.
No, I
don't see any more questions, so once again.